It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Bickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I. We'll find out what impact the Great War had on the world of literature.
First oral arguments in the John Doe investigation appeal began at 2:30 this afternoon before the Seventh Circuit Court in Chicago.
The investigation was looking into whether or not Governor Scott Walker's campaign illegally coordinated with third-party groups in Wisconsin, like Club for Growth. That was halted by U.S. District Judge Rudolph Randa back in May as he decided there wasn't sufficient evidence to warrant continuing the investigation.
Prosecutors are appealing that decision. At stake today is whether or not the investigation into the Walker campaign's activities will continue. The decision could have some sway over the November 4th gubernatorial elections, but it remains to be seen if the Seventh Circuit Court will make a decision before that time.
Here with us now to talk about the arguments being made in court today, we have Howard Schwaber. He's a legal expert and professor of political science at UW-Madison. Howard, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, nice to be here.
Well, the event that led up to this was U.S. District Judge Randa stopping this John Doe investigation. What was the reasoning there that brought us up to today?
Well, you have to back up a little bit to answer that question and ask what was at stake in the investigation in the first place. So there's a Wisconsin state law that says it's not lawful for a candidate and outside groups to do what's called coordinating. And the idea is it's perfectly okay for a group that favors a particular policy to take out an ad that says, you know, vote for low taxes. It's perfectly okay for a group that favors, let's say, Scott Walker for governor to take out an ad that says, vote for Scott Walker for governor. What would not be okay is for Scott Walker to coordinate with that group because that would go around all of the limitations on campaign financing. At that point, there would be unlimited financing because none of the traditional channels for campaign financing and campaign expenditures would be visible. That's particularly true because these groups can list themselves as social rather than political, and therefore can remain anonymous. And the disclosure laws don't apply to them, even though they're undertaking political advertising. So here we had a situation in which there was a guy in Scott Walker's office named R.J. Johnson, who was a key advisor, and he told Walker, you should tell all of the people interested in donating to your campaign to instead give money to Wisconsin Club for Growth. R.J. Johnson is also the chief advisor to Wisconsin Club for Growth. So he would then take off his Scott Walker hat and put on his Club for Growth hat and decide how that money would be spent on ads that would favor the governor. And this allegedly was not coordinating. In other words, the court found that R.J. Johnson was not coordinating with himself, which is kind of remarkable in a way. The reason is there's a two-part argument that Judge Randa relied on. First of all, because these were ads that did not say re-elect Scott Walker or don't recall Scott Walker, but only said don't recall a governor who cuts taxes or don't recall a governor who stands up to teachers' unions, they were not political expression.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, they didn't fit what's called express advocacy. They were only issue advocacy. And Randa concluded that where the Wisconsin law talks about political activity, it only includes express activity, advocacy that names a candidate. That's a bizarre statement in a way. The idea that it's somehow non-political to say, you know, elect a governor who favors low taxes, whatever you think of low taxes, is a strange interpretation of the law. Randa didn't invent that interpretation, though. It's actually, I mean, as artificial as it sounds, it's one that the courts have discovered before. But he then added a second argument, which is even where there is coordination of political activity, he said, there's no risk of corruption as long as the group spending the money shares the basic views of the candidate. And this is where we get into a territory that's really kind of crazy. Because the idea is, no matter what the level of coordination, right? The first argument was it all depends on the nature of the message. The second argument is, no matter what the message or the extent of the coordination, there can't be any fear of corruption involved because, after all, they agreed in the first place. So those are the two arguments that are going to the Seventh Circuit. And the Seventh Circuit, a panel of two Republican appointees and one Democratic appointee, will review those arguments and decide if they were a good reason to put a stop to the criminal investigation.
Right. That investigation is stopped now. In part today, prosecutors are hoping to reopen it. What case do they have to make to get the ball rolling again?
Well, it's not really clear. The factual case is pretty strong. That is, there was an inadvertent release of some email evidence back in August. And it's quite clear that Walker got this advice. It's quite clear. He told donors to give money to the Club for Growth. There are emails of one of his other advisors saying Governor Walker wants all money funneled through the Club for Growth. We're talking millions of dollars here. The Cook brothers are involved. Karl Rove is involved. It's quite clear Club for Growth coordinated the content and reviewed the content of advertising to make sure it was consistent with the message that Walker wanted. I think one of the best emails is from an advisor named Kate Doner. The governor wants all issue advocacy efforts run through one group to ensure correct messaging. So in other words, there's very little question on the facts that there was coordination going on. The case prosecutors have to make is a legal one. They have to persuade the Seventh Circuit that where there's that kind of coordination going on, the fact that the ads didn't mention Walker's name doesn't make them non-political. And they also have to convince the Seventh Circuit that where there's that level of coordination going on, the fact that the governor and the group supporting him share a general ideology doesn't mean that there's no possibility of quid pro quo corruption. Those aren't really factual questions. It really is much more a matter of the legal standard that's at stake.
And a lot of this is coming about because Club for Growth members brought lawsuits against the prosecutors saying, hey, this is violating our free speech rights. If we can't do our political activity, you're violating federal rights here.
Well, that's right. And interestingly, those lawsuits point out one of the fallacies in Randa's argument. Right. So Randa argues that the Club for Growth and Scott Walker agree on everything. Therefore, there's no favors they could buy from him, and therefore there's no risk of corruption. But the fact is that they don't actually have the same agenda. Club for Growth is using this case as a weapon to try and strike down all restrictions on outside advocacy spending. They're arguing they're a private group. It's private expression of political preference. It's protected by the First Amendment. And therefore, the entire system of laws limiting coordination should be struck down. Walker would just as soon not have that fight. The last thing Walker needs is to have that, you know, is to have himself associated with the attempt to completely end all control of campaign financing shortly before an election. So right off the bat, if you look at this case, you can see that one of the fallacies of Randa's arguments is that there's never a possibility that a candidate and a group who share a general ideology might nonetheless not have specifically the same goals. The other problem here is that the Walker case involves the Walker campaign controlling the message by the outside groups. But if you accept the argument that Club for Growth is making, the reverse is equally possible. That is, it's equally permissible for outside groups to say, we'll spend money on your behalf only if you give us prior approval of your message.
And another thing going on in the court today, this is, as you mentioned, some records have been released throughout this. This is a decreasingly secret investigation. And in the court today, the Wisconsin Newspaper Association wants all the records of this case to be unsealed. Club for Growth would like to keep some documents unsealed. What's the legal back and forth over the secrecy of these John Doe investigation documents?
Well, traditionally, John Doe investigation documents are confidential, and that's one of the reasons that they're John Doe investigations. The law is quite unclear on this score. The Wisconsin Journalists Association is arguing that these are essentially public records and therefore covered by the Sunshine and Public Records laws that were, you know, Freedom of Information Act kinds of laws, which are quite strong in Wisconsin. Walker would like to have everything sealed, frankly. And Club for Growth has kind of a mixed position. They want some of these things revealed. That's really uncharted territory. In the past, attempts to get records of this kind revealed have been rebuffed on the grounds that it's necessary for the prosecutors to preserve the confidentiality of the investigation. And the fear would be that releasing the documents would impair the ongoing the fairness and accuracy and effectiveness of that ongoing investigation. In this case, given the amount that's been dumped already, and the amount that's already been presented in the press already, there's a pretty good argument that it's too late to close that barn door, and a full picture should be released. But that's going to require some balancing of factors by the court, and legally it's a murky question.
Are the documents we've seen this case in general affecting the race for governor in Wisconsin?
That's hard to say. It looks like the answer is no. But that's partly because the race for governor in Wisconsin was always close, and Walker has always had a strong core of support. There's always been an almost as strong core of opposition until the election turns on a relatively small group in the middle at this stage. It's not clear, however, that there isn't, you know, room left and time left for damage to be done or for an effect to happen one way or another. It's very unlikely that the Seventh Circuit will issue a ruling before the election. So most likely what we'll get out of this is a flurry of news stories, some more attention on these emails, and some more discussion of the roles that the various people have played. But barring the unlikely event of a decision by the Seventh Circuit unfavorable to Walker that comes before the election, I don't think this is going to have much more effect than it's had already.
Well, and whatever the ruling is, it isn't saying anyone is guilty or innocent of any charges. It's a red light or a green light on the future of the investigation itself.
That's absolutely right. So no one should assume that the outcome of the Seventh Circuit's decision has anything to do with whether anyone has done anything wrong or not. On the other hand, if Randa is overruled by the Seventh Circuit and the investigation is ultimately allowed to go forward, there's also a state judge who has to rule, it certainly will indicate that the prosecution is based on a theory of legal wrongdoing that could be recognized. And it's worth pointing out, a number of Walker's staff have gone to jail already for this.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Howard Schwaber, legal expert and professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the John Doe investigation case heard today at the Seventh Circuit Court in Chicago.